You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Arthur Penn's haunting neo-noir reimagines the hard-boiled detective film for the disillusioned, paranoid 1970s. In one of his greatest performances, Gene Hackman oozes world-weary cynicism as a private investigator whose search for an actress's missing daughter, Melanie Griffith, leads him from the Hollywood Hills to the Florida Keys, where he is pulled into a sordid family drama and a sinister conspiracy he can hardly grasp. Bolstered by Alan Sharp's genre-scrambling script and Dee Dee Allen's elliptical editing, the daringly labyrinthine Night Moves is a defining work of the post-Watergate cinema, a silent scream of existential dread and moral decay whose legend has only grown with time.
I love this line from my favorite Bostonian film critic, Sean Burns, where he says, Hackman excelled at portraying gruff men with volcanic tempers, yet few stars seem so easily wounded. He wasn't afraid to play weakness, no matter how much his characters may have hated showing it. And I think that it is a perfect kickoff to talk about this incredible film, Night Moves. As soon as Criterion said that the 4K of Arthur Penn's neo-noir was coming out, I immediately earmarked it with you, Sean, and then you went and saw it. Was it at the Coolidge you saw it as part of this?
Yeah, they were doing a Gene Hackman retrospective, so that was a nice Sunday afternoon of wallowing in existential dread and malaise.
And walking out. I also love the temperature that you take on new people, new to classic films from the Coolidge. What was the audience's reaction? Because you often see, like, this was one I remember we texted back and forth, and you're like, I can't wait for these kids to have to deal with this movie. How was the reckoning post that session? Or was it full of people who were very familiar?
It wasn't as bad as I showed it a couple of years ago when I programmed a series at the Somerville Theater, and I showed it on a double bill with Robert Aldrich's Hustle.
Oh, great.
And after, everyone wanted to hurt me.
Yeah, both of those movies are the biggest bummers of all time. Robert Aldrich is...
That's why I thought they went so well together. But I got a text from my friend Tyler. Thanks for the great date movies, Burns.
It's like Bleak Week. They have that over at the AMC on the other side of the coast. It's like Bleak Week. That would be a great Bleak Week double feature: Night Moves and Hustle. Hustle fucking stings. It's a great movie.
They both have these endings that kind of suck all the joy and hope out of humanity and just leave you there.
But this beautiful release, what's been the legacy of Night Moves? Because for me, for people who are listening, New Hollywood always fascinated me, and it happens with different filmmakers and films, but New Hollywood fascinated me right from the time I was at university, because one of my film lecturers, a guy by the name of Dr. Hamish Ford, really, really whip smart guy. We were talking about my favorite filmmaker, Michael Mann, and this is sort of when I was really formulating the research and stuff that like underpins everything I do around Mann.
Which I was going to say, you like Michael Mann?
Yeah, a little. And he just said, Michael Mann has always struck me as a bit of a new Hollywood filmmaker that just never made new Hollywood films at the time that new Hollywood was kicking around. And at that stage, I was so green. I was like, what's new Hollywood? And he was like, well, it's this. And he kind of gave me a curricula, or at least started it. And then I just like ran with it and saw every single conceivable thing that was available on VHS and original DVDs or ripped at the university library or whatever the case may be. So I saw Night Moves in amongst that as this is a quintessential sort of new Hollywood film. And then there's this other brilliant line in Mark Harris's essay for Criterion, Losing Ground, where he called that like Night Moves was a Watergate noir, and he paired that in with a couple of other films, obviously. Pakula's The Parallax View, Altman's The Long Goodbye, and then Stuart Rosenberg's The Drowning Pool, which is the the Paul Newman film, which I think is like a proto Inherent Vice if ever I've seen it. And so I love now sort of joining the dots of like Watergate noirs being the particular thing that like your faith in humanity is just sucked out of the room, and there's no nice feeling that comes out of a noir, no even modest satisfaction. But yeah, it's how's this movie sat with you? And I'm so grateful that Criterion did this. The cover, I think the cover should come with a spoiler if you. The cover is the most iconic shot in the movie, but it's, which is stunning, by the way. But the moment I saw this, I was just blown away, and then we can get to the gene of it all. How long has it been sitting with you? When did you see it?
I saw it in college, and I'm of two minds about the Criterion presentation of it, and it's sort of being held up now, because for a long time this movie was like an orphan. You know, the director and the screenwriter had this huge falling out, and all they did was shit talk each other in the movie throughout it. It took 2 years of post-production before it came out, and it was kind of, I think it came out with the week of Jaws, or a week before Jaws, and it really got lost. And I just stumbled on it. It was one of those things you'd heard about, and I saw the VHS, and there's, you know, one of my favorite genres is Gene Hackman in a windbreaker. You know, it's like, oh, he's a middle-aged detective. There's 400 of those movies, and they're all much worth a sit.
We've just started a film club on One Heat Minute Productions, which I call The Juice. The first people who are listening to this, our first month theme is Heat Caliber. We've picked a selection of films. I think I'm just front running. I need the Gene Hackman in a windbreaker month curated by a special judge, special jury president, Sean Burns. I'm just putting it out there that at some point we have to do it. Night Moves can be one of them. I can't wait to see what else is in there.
And yeah, you know, you're watching, it's like a detective movie, and then until it's not.
Yeah, until it's not.
And he sort of wraps up the case about an hour into the film. And I remember sitting there with my old roommate, and we're watching, we're like, what the hell's going on in this movie? And then when it ended, we're like, all right, what just happened?
That's exactly the great thing. It's like, hold on, what just happened?
And from being 19, watching it for the first time, it was very, like, there's parts of it that just kind of nestle in your brain, like little scenes and reaction shots. And then, you can't really appreciate this movie until you're an old fuck like us, though, Mr. 40-year-old Blake. Yes. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You look at Gene Hackman and you're like, that was 40. That's the kind of 40 I feel. I don't feel this new 40. I feel like Gene. I feel like he's my guy. I feel like eating fondue. I feel like being jealous. I feel like studying chess endlessly because I'm obsessed with it. You know, like that's, and just everywhere he goes.
Hackman was never young. He was one of those guys. He was middle aged for his entire career. That was what was so great about him. He could just.
And he even looked old when he was in Young Frankenstein. They put an old wig on him, and he like basically looks like Gene Hackman from like the Royal Tenenbaums. Like that's what exactly what he looks like. He had the face.
No, gradually like the jobs of his characters got more important while he kind of looked the same. He went from like an assistant to like the senator to the president. But yeah, so I mean, where do we start with Night Moves? You got to find a promiscuous teenage Melanie Griffith who's running around trying to fuck her mom's old boyfriends to even the score.
Yes, it's this is the brilliance of Night Moves. He's on a case that takes him away from home at the worst possible time that it can be taken away, and yet he goes. He's hired by a person who seems like the worst possible person to be getting this daughter back. That's what with every new piece of information that you find out in this movie, it's like, this is a bad idea for her to come back here. With every new person that you encounter, they even like the absolute skeezy and slimy, very early performance from James Woods, you can sort of empathize with them as having their own like internal hero complexes, that they're taking her away from this bad situation to help her. And so every person that you encounter and every place that you find our young Melanie Griffith prior to coming back home and all of the things that will unfold, you kind of think every new place is better for her to be there. And so then the whole thing feels radically incongruous the entire time you're watching. Like, is this the right? And I think even his wonderful character is realizing that this is not good. And then what is,
well, should he leave her with the stepfather who's fucking her?
Yeah. Like, he's like, none of this is,
I mean, that's not a good option either, Blake.
none of it's good. He's like, none of this is good to this point. And then he's like, I'm just going to bring her back. And then, unlike other detectives, this is the one film. There's so many times this has happened in a noir film where a detective discovers someone or returns someone home, and then there's a double back because there's a problem once they do get home and the detective has to come in and save the day. But it's the first time I ever believed that the detective was like washing his hands of the case. And that's what's so magnificent about his performance. He fully, like, when he drives away and he takes his check and there's chaos unfolding, he's like, I'm out.
Yep.
And it's only when the later events of the film that, like, sort of cause, you know, the engine for the third act, which is like, you know, that she does come home and that she does die in a tragic accident. And there are other bigger machinations that have been happening beneath the surface the entire time. But I'm just completely always blown away by this movie and the weird relationships, the weird little islands of comfort and satisfaction they find, the constant, you know, backstabbing that is happening with almost everyone that he encounters, and he knows he's being backstabbed, but he's kind of like waiting to see how it plays out. I just think it's, yeah, I don't know why, I don't know why Alan Sharp and Arthur Penn hated each other so much. I don't know why, because it just seems like whatever their sensibility was the perfect conflict, because the whole movie feels like it's wrestling. And Gene Hackman is holding the thing together because you just can't take your fucking eyes off him. It's not young Melanie Griffith that you're looking at. It's just him, because you want to see how he's reacting to every situation. He's brilliant. He's brilliant.
No, and Sharp's screenplay, every line is a zinger. It's, yes, just one after another. Like, it's like, it's like an old, you know, it's an old Bogart detective movie written by Lee Brackett or something. I mean, yeah, but, yeah, except done in the 70s where everyone's really depressed. Everyone's has really bad hair and
has bad hair and probably has sunstroke and is day drinking. It's fantastic.
Oh, and it's got that like drinking guys camaraderie that I love, that like when he meets the stuntman, like they're just instantly best friends. They go, like, they fuck up that kid at the bar. It's like these men, they'll be friends for life now, and they go to the games. And it's funny because Hackman's an ex-football player at the time before the NFL was really the NFL.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was kind of a star, but he's broke and has crappy seats and,
yeah,
complete faded glory.
That's the whole movie, is just faded glory. Faded glory. Faded glory of relationships, faded glory of jobs, faded glory of like that. And I think that that's what it, why, I think that that's why it hangs around, because people can't forget it. That's what's so brilliant about this movie. It's like, once I saw it, I never, like, it has always held a very nice position in those movies. It's, and as you said, it's a bummer. So it's not something you revisit so as regularly. So when you watch it again, there's like a, you've had enough cognitive distance to be like, this is a nice reminder. It's a nice reminder of how good this movie is and how no one would want to make a movie like this.
Well, because it's not the set pieces that stay with you. And when there is action in the movie, it's pretty lame. I mean, there's that stupid thing where he has to kick that guy in the water, which is just this terrible stunt. You know, you just remember the atmosphere. And I mean, how many scenes just play out with them, especially once they get to Florida, where everybody's just hanging out. And he's trying to figure out, you know, like, what's the setup here?
Yeah.
She won't tell him. And
yeah, he's walking around. These are the things that I love. He gets to Florida. He walks straight up the first moment that he arrives. Young Melanie Griffith is just changing, like at a clothesline, and he's trying to figure out, it's Jennifer Warren, right, is the main character. Yeah, he and Jennifer Warren are sitting, like, just in having an encounter together, having a chat, and he's like looking around, and then a stepfather walks in, and he's just like, he truly does that. What is going on here? Like, he's literally going, like, what is this dynamic? Are you guys a couple? Were you guys a couple? And then he, like, traded up to Melanie Griffith. Like, what the hell is going on here? And I think that that's just how magnificent.
He's really not dressed for Florida, despite, like, not being obviously not dressed for Florida. Like, there's a way a lesser filmmaker would have made that into a gag, but he just looks slightly uncomfortable constantly.
Yes. Yeah. It's hot. Everyone else is open shirts, every free flowing cotton, and he's in, like, pleated pants, tucked
he's
in shirt.
He's tucked in.
He's sweating constantly. They don't hide any of that. It's just got something. It's got something.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
We've talked about a little bit about Gene. Talked about this character, Harry Mosby, great character. Another great Harry in his.
So many characters named Harry.
Yeah, so many characters named Harry. But without us sort of having to address the tragedy of his recent passing, can we talk?
Why do they keep releasing more details? I don't need to know anymore.
It was awful. It was an awful situation of two people who probably needed formal care, not receiving formal care, and then tragedy befalling them together alone, and then all these nasty things happening.
Every week, there's some new disgusting detail that has to be on the front page of every entertainment section, and I don't know. It's like, I understand why you want to live off the grid now.
Yes, exactly. But let's talk about Jane, because I think I think it took a little while after he basically said, I'm not doing this anymore, for people to realize the gravity of Gene not doing it anymore. it was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And he was always one of the best. And there was, like, people like yourself and myself who look at him and hold him in the same esteem as, you know, as Nicholson and as Pacino and De Niro, as, like, the biggest, one of the biggest and most important actors. But he was so much more workmanlike, and as you said,
yeah, he was as good as those guys, but he made 4 or 5 movies a year.
Exactly.
It was like when Nicholson made a movie, it was an event, and he made one movie a year. And, you know, Hackman liked to work. What was the agent's famous line? Mr. Hackman works for money.
That's so good. And yeah, so he just used to work, and those classics would pop up, but they would have other movies that he was more minor in. And that's not to say he didn't.
Where it was Gene Hackman in a Windbreaker.
Yes, Gene Hackman in a Windbreaker. What do I need in this? Not every movie can be Crimson Tide, like, or not every movie can be Unforgiven. Like, it's these sorts of things. But can you talk to me about a little bit about, like, what he means to you, and why he's so special, and why, like, despite all of these disgusting and gory details that we're trying to ignore, like, what he still means to the culture?
Well, it was incredible because he had this great range while always being identifiably Gene Hackman.
Yes. Yes.
You know, he never, he wasn't a trend. Sometimes he had a mustache. Like, it was like Robert Mitchum said, sometimes I wear a cowboy hat, you know? It was that thing, but you would totally buy him, as they've been doing a couple of theaters here have been doing Hackman retrospectives, and you know, or watched him one night. There was a double feature of Another Woman and Twice in a Lifetime that my friend had. And so in one, he's this college professor in a Woody Allen movie, or this writer, novelist, professorial type, and in the next, he's a steel worker. And I totally believed him as both, and he doesn't change his mannerisms.
He's just him. He's just him.
Yeah, the man could just exude this effortless authenticity no matter what he was playing. You never saw him stretching. Yet, you know, he was like funny as hell in Get Shorty and then deadly
Oh.
serious in other films. I mean, he's terrifying and in Unforgiven, he's funny and terrifying.
Yes. Yeah, he's. And I think what that one beautiful little line that you were talking about, you know, profiling a bunch of these movies that were being released in your hometown is he was fearless to be weak. Like my favorite performance of his ever for the longest time was Unforgiven. You know, I've seen that movie countless times. I think it is a stone cold masterpiece. David Webb Peoples like writes a beautiful, you know, speaking of a bit of detachment from New Hollywood, right? So, like, purely New Hollywood kind of 70s revisionist Western and puts it in a drawer. And then Clint finds it and goes, oh, yeah, I'll make that tomorrow. And David Webb, there's a great few beautiful interviews with David Webb Peoples, which is like, oh, yeah, he took the first draft. Like, I didn't, he basically took every word, and that's
No, I
exactly
thought
what.
Clint had saved it for like 10 years, though,
Oh,
because Clint
yeah, oh,
got it
yeah.
after,
He got it
because
after
Coppola
someone
was going to
else.
make it in the 80s, and then Clint got it from Coppola and said, I'm not ready for this. And then,
I will be. But yeah, just didn't change a word of it later on. So David Webb Peoples has it made at the time into, you know, Academy Award winning Best Picture. But I remember seeing Gene in that so many times, and I was just like, this guy is unbelievable. Like, there's nothing funnier to me than how bad he is at fixing his roof. But there's nothing scarier to me than him talking about how terrible English Bob was to English Bob's face in a
Everything
jail.
with English Bob is just my favorite thing, maybe in the history of movies. That whole scene on the 4th of July, just standing in the middle of the town. Am
It's
I
that, and
talking
then
about the Queen again, Bob?
it's on the 4th of July. It's
He
such.
turns Bob into an insult. Like the amount of different ways he says Bob. Not like old Bob here.
But then I saw him as Harry Caul in The Conversation. I saw that after. And I was just like, I've just never seen anything like this guy. Like that guy who terrified me to bits is so desperate and lonely and fragile. And it's all just a facade. And like just the way he even carries his body when he sees his girl and he goes to her apartment and he's just this big, dumpy, like toddler jumping in bed with her almost. It's just there's something so that lacks all that kind of masculine brio that he has, and yet it's just amazing. He's got all that range. He's got all that
Well,
range.
that's why I think Night Moves is probably my favorite of his performances, because he's this football player, he's this jockey guy, and he's making fun of Romer movies, and you know, he's completely insecure about all of this, and his wife cuckolding him with this prissy, fancy art dealer who walks with a cane. That's the best thing for like a macho guy like Harry to be cuckolded by a gimp. To him, it's just he can't figure it out. And there's so many things in the movie that he can't understand, and you just watch his frustration and sadness. He really doesn't understand a fucking thing that goes on the whole movie.
No, he doesn't. And he's looking, and I just love that he fought in a different movie. I won't say a better or a worse movie, but in a different movie, the reveal of the wife with the guy in the car is enough. And then it's straight back to their house and they have a confrontation. But what's so great about Harry Mosby is that like he's desperate to understand, and you're watching him trying to put the pieces together. And even in Mark Harris's great essay for this, he's just like, and he kind of shows the perils of trying to be three moves ahead instead of being in the moment and like addressing it. He's like, he tries to be three moves ahead, figure it out, and then he has to go back to this art dealer's house that looks right out of The Long Goodbye. Like he comes back to this art dealer's house, he looks and he has to just witness this relationship unfolding, like while they're in the bedroom and he's just sitting in the lounge room having a drink while his wife's shagging another man in the next room, and he's just there like trying to figure it out. And it's like, that's great. The detective who,
well,
like,
even when he first confronts Harris Yulin after he first finds out, and he doesn't go to his wife, he goes to him, and you see there's this like nervous coiled energy in like Hackman's arms.
Yes.
And he doesn't know what to do because he can't hit him.
Yes.
And he can't goad the guy into a fight.
He really wants to hit him though. He really is like
no, it's like his arms are so tense where he's like herky jerky hand movements because he's like, I just want to punch this fucking guy.
And it would be easier.
Yeah.
It would be easier, but he has to just sit in it. He has to sit there and be like, she would prefer him than me.
And that's why, I mean, Hackman's such an amazing actor, because he can show he's not afraid. Like, I mean, he's a big star. He doesn't have to show himself so weak. I mean, stars would go through scripts and go, no, I'm not doing that, you know, especially big, tough talking guys like Gene, you know. But he loved that. He loved to play that kind of vulnerability. And I mean, he just always said, like, he bruises so easily, you know, even when people make fun of his porch, Unforgiven, like, he looks kind of sad.
And I can't remember who says the joke, but they're like, you should shoot the guy who made it.
Yeah, you should hang the carpenter.
And he looks, the wounded look on his face is like,
I know, it's great because they play it as like, oh, he's going to be really scary about this, but he looks so wounded. He's like this puppy dog.
Oh, it's so great. But this movie is a really special one.
I like I said, I'm of two minds about this. Nice that it's now the kind of movie that gets trumpeted by Mark Harris, of all people. You know, when it used to be this under the radar thing that people would discover.
Mark has a level of like, what do you call it? Like prestige associated with the movie.
Yeah, well, he's like the epitome of what I call, you know, he was the voice of Entertainment Weekly. And
yes.
It's that sort of middle brow champion of, you know, the kind of stuff I don't usually enjoy, is that's like his wheelhouse. So it's kind of like, oh, you're into my stuff now. Come on.
It's finally elevated. I think, but why is that? It's not Arthur Penn. It's not Alan Sharp. It's Gene.
Yeah.
It's realizing that he was an everyman in the purest sense.
Well, you can see the movie. I mean, the progression of Arthur Penn, like Bonnie and Clyde was deconstructing the gangster movie, and then like Little McMahon was the Western. So this was his detective movie.
Yes.
Deconstruction. And I mean, they were all coming out around that time, and they all bombed, right?
Like, yes.
I mean,
Long
Goodbye Tank. Nobody wanted to see the, I guess Chinatown was the one that.
Chinatown was the only one that had that same, you know. And I remember speaking to Adam Naiman when I was doing the Zodiac show, Zodiac Chronicle, and he was just like, yeah, it took a guy who'd experienced maybe one of the worst things that could possibly happen to your wife and unborn child ever to exist to come in and go, how do I make this ending unfathomably uglier and more depressing? It's just like,
but Chinatown had the glamour and the, you know, the throwback thing.
The throwback,
this is ratty guys. In a windbreaker.
And you know what? It's the same challenge that noir, even from a literary standpoint, has had, which is like a lot of great crime novels and a great noir novels are throwbacks. And it takes a lot of time to come around. And, you know, I'm not shy to say, like, reading contemporary crime fiction from people like Sean Cosby and Jordan Harper, like reading Jordan Harper's Everybody Knows rather than reading Elroy's LA Confidential, it's like, oh, we can make this now. We can write these now. Can we have more of these? Because this is muddy and messy and disgusting and salacious and fantastic. But and it's happening right now. We don't have to do a throwback and do all this sort of poetic free association. We can just have right.
But I think audiences like that better when there's the remove, right? Because they can be like, oh, well, look at how much better we were than the past. Like, that seems to
And this movie at the time was like, no, this is how bad we are right now. This is how shit the 70s is. Whereas we want to say, oh, the 70s is great. You know, free love, people are happy. It's like, no, people are depressed. People are rolling into the 80s. Where, you know, people.
Where were you when Kennedy got shot? Which Kennedy?
Exactly. Exactly.
That's the whole mood in the movie there. Yeah, it's just a, you know, it's just a mood.
It's just a mood. And God, he was a titan. Everything he does. And in this recent time, the only thing that has been so, the only silver lining of this awful tragedy is so many people talking about Gene movies. And in your little piece where you're profiling, like, the Royal Tenenbaums, I'm glad that there are, I would just say the thing I'm gladdest about is that there are more Gene Hackman movies in the Criterion Collection now after Night Moves. I'm just like, more Gene always. Because the Royal Tenenbaums, I immediately watched my Criterion disc of that when he passed, because I'm like, I need it all. I need this rascal. I want to be with him.
Well, we just pretend that's his last movie, right?
But, yeah, you can.
That's a great note to go out on, and we don't have to.
It's the perfect note to go out on. Perfect note. It's so great. And then even Bill Murray recently in a bunch of interviews is like, I don't think Gene's like a tough guy. And he was pretty strong with Wes Anderson at the time. Wes is still, you know, finding his voice truly as a filmmaker at the time he makes Royal Tenenbaums. And he was like, and he was tough, and he was a bit blustery. He was a pro. And then he's like, and then he saw the movie and he's like, oh, that was great. And he was so sweet and nice to Wes afterwards, because he didn't really kind of know what his style was while it was being made. He didn't know if it was going to be a bad movie. But God, it's a perfect movie, and he's so perfect in that movie. I could watch that on a loop. That would just make me
happy.
Well,
he brings an energy, and there's a lot of other Wes Anderson movies I love, but this one's different because Hackman can't really be contained within the Wes Anderson dollhouse, you know, where everyone else that sort of narcotic line reading, and they all fall in and they're all in lockstep, and he refuses to do it. And while it might have made for a contentious shoot, there's an energy that movie has that the other Anderson films don't. And it's perfect for that character.
Yes.
Because he's always breaking things, and he just comes in and breaks the dollhouse. Yes. And Hackman uproots all the scenes where everyone else falls in. You know, even Tom Hanks sounds like Bill Murray in Asteroid City. But you know, he's just doing, again, he's doing Gene. He's not going to transform anything. You know?
You got Gene. And I love that allegory of like the dollhouse with him in Tenenbaums too, because it's like, he's even putting up things that people took down in the dollhouse. He just goes and puts up stag heads. He puts things back up. People are like, no, this is not what we want in the dollhouse. He goes, I don't care. It's my dollhouse. This is my dollhouse now.
Yeah, I feel like Anderson's movies, they're so unified now. They don't have that. And as much as I admire them, there's something.
You want someone who is explosive. I actually very recently watched The French Dispatch, and Adrian Brody being so angry in that movie at certain points just really gave it a lovely energy, because he was just like, he lost the cadence of those movies. He just got so mad. I'm like, yeah, Adrian Brody is a really fun actor. He's a weird guy, but man alive, he can act. He's fun.
Well, yeah, I just wish he'd stop talking. I think he's still talking, right?
I think they just turned the Oscars off, he's still going.
Everybody went home. He's still up there.
Bless his heart. This is a beautiful release. Gene Hackman was a beautiful and legendary man, and holy shit. Like, as you said, there are certain scenes that are titanic beyond titanic, and there are so many of these moments and these zingers, and this, and the feeling of this movie has hung around. And I think it's just aged into the perfect vintage where it can be mainstream, and it should be, because for God's sake, there's been other things that have been turned into mainstream, or, you know, heralded as canonical, that don't have nearly the feeling or the level of beauty and the level of nuance and the level of just holy shit that this movie has. I'm so
glad.
And the
absolute pleasure of watching Gene Hackman slap the shit out of James Woods.
Oh, that has aged beautifully. That has aged better than anything else.
I love Woods' line, I won second prize in a fight.
James Woods literally won second prize in the fight of life. So I think that
he's
that,
so good in this, though. I mean, he's always really good.
He is really good. There was
bad
a time
human,
where,
great actor.
Oh, Any Given Sunday, James Woods. Give me that guy all day. That's a great...
Nixon, I wanted to call them an Ehrlichman spin-off sitcom. Him and J.T. Walsh.
God, what an
alternative. I want that expanded universe.
Hit that up. That's fantastic. Sean Burns, my favorite Bostonian film critic, one of my dear friends. Thank you. This is beautiful. I appreciate you very much. And Gene Hackman. No one ever liked him before or after.
They don't allow people to look like that in movies anymore. So.
I don't think people could handle how good he would be. All these good looking people trying to talk to Gene, he would just eat them a flock of life.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.